too much work doesn't burn people out. Too little work that is meaningful burns people out. And that's what's happening, is that too much of the work now has got no meaning for the people doing it, creating it.
Hello and welcome to the Now Then podcast. In this conversation, we speak to Matt Follows, a peak performance psychologist and coach for some of the biggest names in the creative and entertainment industry. We discuss how he handles pressure, finding your flow, and cutting through the bullshit. This episode is sponsored by Smoke and Mirrors. We hope you enjoy.
Now then, Matt.
Now then.
Now then, now then.
Now then, now then.
Oh, Matt, thank you for coming on. If we go straight to the question, so what is it you do right now, Matt, within the industry?
Yeah, so at the moment so what I do now is I'm a peak performance psychologist and a coach and also a psychotherapist. I've trained in all of them essentially. And I work with the creative industries, so film, TV, advertising, design, music, all across the board of that. And I work with people mainly with the leadership teams and the CEOs and the CSOs and all of that kind of stuff. But also sometimes I work with the kind of people who are just coming into the industry. So I mentor at the School of Communication Arts as well, and help people who are coming into the business as well to kind of prepare them for what lies ahead. So essentially work with the top people and bottom people and middle people as well at times.
People starting out with all the innocence of the industry, and then the top tier people with all the bitterness.
Yeah, exactly. It's trying to tackle the issues from top and below, essentially, seems to be the best way to do it. Because you can't just tackle it just at the bottom or the middle areas, then you kind of need the top tiers, the kind of leadership teams to be on board and be talking the same language. And vice versa, if you've got the leadership teams and they're fully skilled up and they're talking a certain language, you need to make sure that the people below that actually understand that and the benefits of working certain ways as well. So, yeah, it's basically tackling it from all angles as much as we can, wherever we can.
You were part of the industry, though, weren't you? Before you started your own business, this business, you were the agency side.
So I started off in 1996, back at M&C Saatchi. So M&C Saatchi had pretty much, was a startup essentially, still a startup at that point. I think it was 95, I can't remember. But it's a startup, so it was small. It wasn't famous for doing anything particular at the time. But we were lucky enough, we were living in Tottenham at the time, and we were lucky enough, me and my partner, to get a placement at M&C. And we got offered a job and snapped it up. So that's where it all started. Did that for M&C for about 4 years, I think. We did stuff like British Airways and Foster's and Silk Cut and Benson and Hedges and all of the really kind of holistic brands that everyone kind of would run a million miles from now. So we did that and it was great fun. Loved it, absolutely loved it to bits. And then we got headhunted to another startup, which was called Wyden and Kennedy.
Just a small little startup.
Yeah, exactly. When it kind of no one kind of knew who they were. It's kind of like all we knew was that they had Nike, and one of the people who got us into M&C had moved over to be the first creative director there. Not the first one, probably the second or third one there. And he said, come over. And we were like, well, work on Nike. Do you know what I mean? It was like, absolutely. So took a big pay cut and took a big old gamble and joined it. And yeah, stayed there for a few more years, which is great fun. Really good fun.
Oh, wow.
It's interesting that side, because I guess as well, the agency side of things is very much like behind closed doors from our point of view, isn't it? And it's always a little bit like you always wonder what goes on in there, you know.
Looking behind the curtain sometimes.
What's the environment like working within the commercial advertising agencies?
It's changing now, but I mean, back then it was the 90s and it was kind of in the very early 2000s. So it was very much... It was intense, put it like that. It was kind of like you were there all hours that there were. You were there at the weekend. You were there really late at night. You were there early in the morning. And everybody was really, I think people wanted to be there doing that kind of stuff. We didn't know any better in those days. And we were all really hungry to win awards. We were all really hungry to make a name for ourselves. We're all really hungry to kind of not let down the clients. So it was, and it was a very family kind of, it felt like a very family atmosphere. So a lot of the people, even though it's been like some of those people have been like nearly 30 years ago, still really good friends with them. Kind of like trauma bonds, probably. but it's very, very intense. It's shifting now. It's still, I think the intensity is still there to do great stuff, but the ways of working have shifted. And I've learned a lot, obviously, from studying all the psychotherapy and the psychology and stuff since then, about the ways we were working weren't the best ways of working, and certainly weren't the most efficient ways of working, and most definitely weren't the best for your mental health kind of stuff. So it's shifted, but it was, I can't deny, when you're in your early 20s and you're getting paid pretty decently and you're getting free beer and free champagne and going to great parties and stuff, even though you live in a shithole. We lived in Tottenham. It was like, not a good, I'm not saying Tottenham's a shithole, but where we lived was, when you kind of got that kind of contrast, it's pretty awesome, to be fair.
But was it like you were kind of just doing it because, did you guys not know any better though? Did you like, because they were both startups and you were hungry for it, would you ignore things like how much it was having a toll on you?
Yeah, massively. Our coping mechanism was alcohol. So that's what you would do. It's kind of like you would work hard, but you would play really, really hard. And you would blot it out, essentially. So, and I think a lot of people did that kind of way of working. It was all balls to the wall, kind of, let's just get the great stuff out no matter what. And we can, and certainly in my mind, it was that we'll rest later. But for now, let's do great stuff. So totally different to how I would work now.
I guess it's a bit of a slow burner, that. What? Working within that environment and working within, I guess, that kind of like delusion of this is the way we do things. What impact does that have on you as a creative / CD?
What effect does it have with that kind of way of working, or that kind of...
What does it do to you as an artist, you know, because it's quite... Well, for one, you've got the intensity, and for two, you've got this... I guess this support mechanism that isn't real, but it's just a case to keep the batteries going, right? You know, there must be a lot of burnouts.
Oh, massive. Yeah, massive. But again, we didn't know what it was then. We just thought we were knackered and just needed a break. But with the irony was, there wasn't a break. I mean, what happened to me, the truth of the matter, what happened to me is that it did all catch up on me. So when I was 29, and had a massive anaphylactic shock on a dark coke shoot, blew up like, you know, as anaphylactic shock does. It was not a good experience. Got rushed to the A&E, pumped full of adrenaline and drugs and whatever. Came around 2 minutes away from a massive cardiac arrest at 29. Blamed my immune system to shit, essentially. Didn't realize that at the time, because it's kind of like just the way we worked. But even that wasn't a wake-up call for me personally, because that happened on a Friday, and on Sunday I was back at my desk working. And the only reason I didn't go in on Saturday was we had to move flat. So you kind of get yourself locked into a certain mindset about this is the way things are done, and the burnout or whatever that I think it was a burnout now, knowing at the time, but that was just considered by me to be a blip on the radar. It's like, just keep pushing. Obviously, ate something wrong kind of thing.
And you wouldn't blame it on the actual work environment at the time? You wouldn't think that, you think that it's not coming from this?
Yeah, no, I just thought it was just coming from eating the wrong food at the wrong time. It's anaphylactic. It's kind of that kind of stuff. Now I know that my immune system had been, I basically destroyed my immune system. So essentially what happens, if you kind of pump in high level of stress for a long, long period of time, you're essentially drowning your nervous system in an adrenaline and cortisol. Now, an adrenaline is kind of like, adrenaline gets a bit of a bad rep in the kind of the world of, in the world, people say you're adrenaline junkies and all of that kind of stuff. But adrenaline comes out of the system pretty quickly. It's the cortisol that does the damage. And what cortisol actually does is actively switch off the immune system. That's his job, is to switch off the immune system. So if you've got an illness, they'll give you a cortisol shot. If you've got an autoimmune or whatever, or you've got something that's kind of blowing, your body's attacking itself, they'll give you cortisol to shut down the immune system. But that's what stress does as well. So I didn't realize this, but chronic cortisol levels do that. But what also happens, which again, I didn't realize at the time, which is why I kind of train people in it now, is that cortisol attacks the brain as well. So if you think as creatives, you think our brain is the most valuable tool that we've got, bar none. It's like we don't have creativity, then we're pretty impotent, to be fair. Well, cortisol, there's cortisol receptors across the whole body and brain, every nerve and cell and fiber has cortisol receptors, which means cortisol attaches to everything. So you've blown out your immune system. What it also does, it overstimulates brain cells to death. So what was happening to me, which I didn't realize, was that I was being more and more forgetful. I kind of forgot names. I forgot what briefs I was working on. I forgot what shoots I should be on, all of that kind of stuff. But that's actually because the hippocampus was being attacked by the cortisol, which is your long-term memory banks in your brain. Then what happens is then you find it harder to come up with ideas creatively, because creativity is about pulling up old, unused, misunderstood ideas of the past, collide them into something new, interesting, and different. But if you can't access memory as well as you could, well, now you've got a bit of a problem, because you've got to work even harder to come up with the goods, which is going to put even more stress on the nervous system, which is going to cause more brain cells to kind of like evaporate, which is going to make it harder to get access to your creativity. And you also become less curious when you've got overstimulated through cortisol. So your curiosity starts going.
And then it's just like an endless cycle then.
Sounds a dark place to be.
Well, it's more stress, isn't it? Because if you're blaming yourself because you think, well, I'm not good enough or I'm losing my edge or stuff, then the natural inclination is, well, I better try harder then. Well, if you try harder and you're piling on even more pressure, your body's going to produce more cortisol and adrenaline to cope with the fight or flight you've just triggered. So, yeah, I was stuck in a loop. But the weird thing is, the worse you feel, the less you feel.
But you mentioned before that wasn't even the breaking point for you. That wasn't even a realization, and you're only 29. And then you stayed in the industry for a lot longer after that?
Yeah, I was probably stayed for another couple of years. Did I learn my lesson? No. So I did a couple of years. Then I left. I was like, I can't do this anymore. I left. I became a director. I say I became a director. I was not a successful director, but I was directing for about 5 years, I think, kind of like just shooting where I could and stuff. But at the time of doing that, I suddenly thought, well, my brain is completely addled, kind of like it was not in a good space, wasn't in a good place. So I thought, I'm going to, as a creative as you are, you kind of think, well, I'll fix my own fucking brain, essentially. It's like, if no one else can fix it, I'll fix it. So I started studying. So I did a weekend course in NLP, which is neuro-linguistic programming, back in very, very early 2000s, before anyone kind of knew what it was. It certainly wasn't trendy. And I loved it. I was like, this is the path I want to go on. This is wow stuff. This is not creativity. And I kind of, at that point, I'd blamed creativity for all of the problems I was going through. So I was like, well, this isn't creativity. So this is going to be my exit. This will be my exit route, essentially, my big plan out. So I did that. And I did it for a lot of years. And I got into King's College, studied at King's College, clinical psychotherapy, clinical hypnotherapy, neuropsychology. I basically got completely hooked on it, like massively, massively hooked. And then I came out of there and became a trauma therapist for 4 years, working in hardcore trauma. So it's kind of, all the stuff I'd been through actually trained me really, really well for the next phase of life, because I'd been there. I wasn't just trained in doing it. I'd actually been there and got the battle scars, essentially.
Just to go back to your brain being, I'm not sure, maybe you said broken, you know, talk us through that. What do you mean by that, broken? As in lacking inspiration, or just damaged by the industry, or self-doubt? What kind of things are we talking about?
Yeah, so it obviously wasn't physically broken. It was, I just felt broken. I felt emotionally and mentally broken. I didn't know what I wanted anymore. I didn't know what was up and what was down anymore. If you think about it, I had always strived for the early part of my life to get into advertising. That was the dream. And it was really, really hard to get into advertising. Still is hard to get into advertising, but it was very, very fierce competition. And what I'd done that, I'd got to where I wanted to be. I'd worked in the agencies I wanted to work in. I was working on the clients I wanted to work on. I was winning the awards I wanted to win. And then suddenly suddenly the rug was pulled and I was like, I don't want this anymore. I don't want to be here anymore. So I just felt completely directionless. I felt completely like spinning my wheels going, well, I'm too young to stop. I'm not rich enough to stop. I'm not from a rich family, so I can't stop. What the hell am I going to do now? So it was kind of like, it was a knee-jerk reaction to fix my brain, to fix myself, to give me direction. But I never expected that to give me the direction. I expected it to fix me, to make me better so I could keep doing what I was doing. I didn't expect it to be a complete shift.
Did you fall out of love with the craft, or were you becoming more like hypocritical on your work? Like, what was it? Did you just fall out of love with it, with the craft of advertising and filmmaking?
I fell out of love with my way of working within the system, and it became unsustainable. And and if we think about then as well, it was not, people didn't talk about mental health. People didn't talk about sustainable high performance. People didn't have those kind of conversations. It was very much kept secret and kept quiet because it might spook the clients kind of thing. So it was kind of, I don't remember what the question was, but it was, I'd fallen out of love with my way of working, put it that way. I still love the industry. I wouldn't be in it if I didn't. That's the thing is, I love, and that's what got me back out of the trauma work. So the trauma work was with doctors and lawyers and dentists because it was in Harley Street. And it was good. And it was really kind of, it felt good to be helping people, put it that way, to get through some big, heavy stuff. But I realized they weren't my people. So there was something missing. It's kind of like, okay, I know this is the route I want to be doing. I know this is the kind of work I want to be succeeding at, but these aren't the people I want to be helping. There are other people who these people belong to. And I thought, these are just not my people. I just don't know these people. So it was creativity and it was creative people. And I realized that that was what I left behind. And that's what I loved. It's what got me into the industry in the first place, was the Mad Bastard Creatives. And it's what keeps me in it today. It's just that crazy kind of like ways of thinking and the kind of magic that can be created from these kind of brains. So it was basically a friend of mine who was now running a big agency who I'd kind of grown up with. He got to me and said over breakfast, like, you've been in the industry for so long. You know what we're going through. You've come out of it and you've got all of this training in psychology and psychotherapy and stuff. Would you be interested in coming in and helping someone like me? And I was like, well, that's not what I do. And he says, but would you? And I was like, people like you don't have problems, I thought, right?
But that's crazy, yeah, isn't it?
Cover magazines.
But do you not think that's insane? That because you had a breaking point, but then you're not even looking at yourself and reflecting back on that. You're thinking, oh, no, everyone's still fine. You're still not seeing that there's a problem until someone else has said it to you.
No, exactly, because you kind of think it's just yourself. You think it must just be me who couldn't deal with it. It must be me who's doing it wrong. And even at that point, I was just thinking, I'm not suited for that business anymore. And I was at the beginning because I had a constitution of an ox, do you know what I mean? And the kind of like, I could deal with it. But then when someone comes back to you and kind of says, who's like achieved way above what I had achieved, like literally the golden ticket and everything. And you kind of think, shit, there's an issue here, isn't there? There's a problem here. And say that was, what, 13 years ago. And I haven't looked back since. So that's what brought me back and goes, okay, I'm gonna come and work with the creatives. So they're my people. And that's the same, just people who have got creativity in the title. It's like the people who work in the creative industries. I work with presidents. I work with CEOs. Do you know what I mean? It's kind of like, but it's people who understand the pressures of that industry to consistently and continually have to generate genius on demand. It's kind of like there is no other option. You've got to be great. And I just love that.
Just before we carry on that as well, so you've moved on to this kind of second chapter of your career. What was the breaking point before this transition? What was the moment that made you kind of tip over the edge and go down this new chapter?
I was worked with a client. I can't really say much about the client's confidential, but let's just say the trauma this person had been through was beyond harrowing. It's kind of like, I can't even, I won't imagine what it was like. But this person had been to see so many therapists for so long and had come to me as kind of go, look, I'm at my wit's end now. It's like, literally, I can't sleep. I'm having nightmare, PTSD, complex PTSD, really, really kind of heavy stuff. And what had happened is I had learned a thing called EMDR at the time, which is eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. And it's very, very powerful for trauma work. And I did it. I think we did two sessions for about 90 minutes each, completely blew the problem out. The guy completely different. In fact, I bumped into him in where I live now, like many years later. I can't really say too much, but anyway. And he's great. He's doing really, really well. And that was the point when I just thought, shit, I want to do more of that. How can I help people to get out of whatever they're in, to get into whoever they should become? And I thought, that's where the magic is. And that's where I see my creativity being now. It's like, I still solve problems. I still solve problems creatively. I still solve problems creatively under pressure and with a huge tight deadline. People I work with, they want change fast. They're going to wait weeks and months and years. They go, I need to be on my A game safely ASAP. Can you do that? It's like 100% yes. So that was the switch point. Was like, well, fuck, I can generally help people.
And like, even before then, even before the transition, like for you, I guess what I'm digging at is where were the fuck it point of view? You know, you've got this blip of, you know, going into A&E when you're 29, but where was the point after that where you were like, I'm done?
Looking at my life and really realizing what a wrecking ball I'd put through it. And having that conscious realization of what I'd been unconscious for so long. Because what happens is when I said that the worse you feel, the less you feel, that's dangerous. Because what happens is that, and I'll talk from my own experience, because I wouldn't say anyone else's, but I know they are because I work with them. But from my own experience is that what happens is that you start collapsing inside, but don't feel it. Externally, you're changing, you're shifting, your personality is changing. The way you're interacting, acting and reacting and stuff is different. And people are trying to tell you, to the people who love you, the people who care about you, are trying to say, this isn't right, or you're changing, or what, are you okay? What's wrong? Now, the problem is that you think they're attacking you or they're wrong, not you, because you can't feel it. You're in the center of the storm. As far as you're concerned, you're fine. It's you who's losing your mind. It's kind of like, I'm totally cool, man. I feel on fire. I feel great. Seeing that consciously and realizing it and think, fucking hell, look at the wrecking ball, look at the carnage. And that was the reality. And just thinking, I can't, I'm still young. It's like, I've got a lot of years to do a lot of damage. So I had to stop, basically. There had to be a stop.
And then I guess with your career now, have you felt like you kind of started this thing at the right point? Because it seems like more and more people are being more open with how they're feeling rather than suppressing everything in the past. Yes. How many years? Yeah.
Yeah, I was probably 13 years too early. Because when I started this, it's kind of, I was banging the drum about burnout and stuff back in 2012, before 2012. I tried to go to some of the press, the major press in our industry, and I wrote an article and said, can we talk about this? And I actually got a kickback from it saying, we could never publish something like this in our magazine. One, this doesn't exist. And two, even if it did, we could never publish it because it'll spook the clients out. That was the kind of mentality, and that's the press. It's kind of like the creative press, and it's kind of like, well, that's not great. So thankfully it's caught up, but that's why I had to start. See, even though I was doing a lot of psychotherapy stuff, I was always pitching it as sustainable high performance. And I was pitching it as like creative athletes. You are a creative athlete. And I was pitching it from that stuff back in 2012. I was starting talking about that because that was the language that this audience kind of understood. And that's how I started getting people in. It was kind of like, let's talk about performance and being high performers and peak performers. Let's talk about athletes. Let's talk about musicians. Let's talk about celebrities. And then once they're in the situation, then we start doing the actual work. but it was a kind of lever point. Now it's easier in some ways to kind of get people to talk without the front end loaded. But people come to me because of the front end loaded, because I don't talk any bullshit. When I'm gonna work with someone, I'm gonna get them where they want to get to really fucking quick. And I'm not going to bullshit them, and I'm not going to accept their bullshit either. It's kind of like, we're going to get you there quickly. So it's gotten easier now, but it was a hard slug at the beginning.
I bet, because it's bringing people out of the comfort zone as well, and like you say, getting people to admit something that's wrong. But obviously they must know if something's wrong if they're coming to you. I guess my question would be like, what is the main, when people are coming to you, what is their main issue at the moment that they're saying this is what I think's wrong with me?
Yeah, so there's two kind of things that, as an overarch, there's two kind of things people will come to me for. They either want to do what they love without it killing them. So they want to keep doing the thing they love, but it's slowly destroying them or the people around them. Or they want to get out of the thing they no longer love and find the next great love of their life. So it's those two things are either, I still love what I do, and there's a lot of people who still absolutely madly passionately do, but are kind of in similar situation to where I was, which is kind of like, I'm completely lost and directionless within this thing that I've created. Or they've gone, I've just completely, which is where I kind of transitioned to me in the end, was that I'm done with this. I've done what I've done. I've achieved great stuff. I want to find the next great thing in my life. I want to find the next thing to fall in love with. I want to be brilliant at something else. I want the next chapter. So it's kind of one of those two things. It's kind of the main stuff.
And I guess there's a real fear as well. If you've been doing something for so long, but you feel like you need to get out of it, but you're scared of, like, you know, if someone's been doing something for 20, 30 years, the fear is, well, what do I do next? Like, I'd be scared.
Yeah, well, just to jump on that, actually, because it feels like what you're working on now is quite freeing. And I'd like to just read a quote out from your website, if that's all right. So on your website, you've got, "Snowflakes, beware. My coaching is fast, profound, and bullshit-free, which means I am not the person for you if you want to work with a robotic yes man, crystal dangling hippie, or cookie cutter life coach. P.S. If you call me a life coach in any form, I'll cut you out of my life." So when we read that, there's something really freeing about that, because there's a mad like fear of judgment, I think, in our industry as well, and it is a relationships industry. And also, I think, like you said, Matt, I think you've got this face you put on, you've got this front, this hard front, and it's a tough industry to be in. You need to have a thick skin. Any creative industry is tough because there's an element of like vulnerability that comes in with that. So to read that, I mean, for a lot of people, that just must be like a door opening to unload as well. Do you know what I mean? Just be completely honest, which I think is really rare in our industry. It's something we're trying to do with this podcast right now. Exactly, yeah. You know, so
yeah,
it's a bold statement to have on your website. Where did that come from? You know,
it's come from the fact that, see, what I said to myself when I started training was, I'm not going to touch somebody's brain unless I'm ridiculously highly educated on what can be done, good and bad. So, which is why I went to King's and why I studied for so many years the real hardcore side of proper psychology and proper psychotherapy before I ever call myself a coach. In fact, I did 4 years of trauma work before I even call myself a coach, because I knew from being there myself that my presenting condition is not going to be the truth. And I didn't want to be sitting opposite someone who gives me a presenting condition that's like, I'm a little bit burnt out, and then before we know it, we're in some really heavy shit. Because you can do a lot of damage if you don't know what you're doing. And what's happened is that in the coaching industry is it's become massively oversaturated with badly trained, if at all trained, ill-educated people who think they have the right to tell someone how their brain works. And that's dangerous. And I was kind of like, I don't like calling myself a coach either. I don't like the name coach. That's why I prefer the subconscious bullshit eliminator, It's kind of like, I thought, what could I say that positions me as far as humanly possible away from that industry? And I thought, well, if I swear and I call it out as it is, no one else would say that. So I thought, well, I'll do that. And that's the thing, is I don't want to be likened to that crowd. I don't want to be a part of that crowd. My crowd are the creatives and hardcore psychotherapy, basically.
I'm just writing that down as you speak, because I want to label this podcast the Subconscious Bullshit Eliminator.
Yeah, yeah. I was thinking the exact same thing. I was like, that's such a good title for the name of this.
Just got the green light on that one, so that feels great.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure we couldn't pass that by any other client, so we're just going to take that as a yes from you. Thank you. But it's right. It's cutting through the noise, isn't it? It's being direct. And if you're going to do what you're doing, what's the point in kind of, you know, skirting around the edges with it?
Yeah, exactly. And it's kind of like, another thing is that I am who I am and I talk how I talk. And what I didn't want to do was, I decided I'm never going to not be me ever again. I'm never going to pretend I'm someone I'm not. I'm never going to play the game like that ever again, because I saw the damage it did to kind of put the face on, the game face on, the war face on. So I was like, okay, so I want to put as many people off as I bring on board, because then when they meet me, they won't be surprised. Which is why I do all those videos on LinkedIn. They're kind of like really kind of lo-fi. They're kind of like, they're not lit. Do you know what I mean? I look like shit in them most of the time. It's kind of like, but I probably will if I meet you. So it's kind of like, let's just kind of cut it straight to the, let's just be honest. That's the thing. Let's just be honest. Like, we're two people. We're having a dialogue. Let's just fucking not lie to each other.
It's really scary that, though, I think. I felt it with this podcast, Ozzy, because, like, even when you bring directors, producers, creatives, or whatever, like, in order for people to be open, you really have to kind of lay your skeletons down. And fucking hell, there's a lot of stuff, especially with our industry, with work, with process, with craft, that is personal. And actually, you don't want people to know about it, because maybe you don't do it quite right or whatever. You know, there's a lot of... a lot of judgment in our industry, I think. So even with this, that's what we're trying to do as well, is trying to break that mold. But it's difficult. And even now, when some podcasts go out, I listen back to some of the stuff and try and let go. But we think it's important. So yeah, it's good to hear you say that, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, which was the whole point of why we started it, was that.
Yeah. It's really important, because it's got the reason the industry's in the state it's in certain ways, is because people have had to put a war face on. They've had to put the armor on. And that will eventually catch up with you. It will bring you down. It's kind of like, you can't do that for a long period of time. It's not sustainable. And that's the thing. And I think the more that people are opening up, the more that people are honest, I'm finding, actually, I mean, if you see things on LinkedIn, people are opening up and being really honest and raw, and they're not getting the negative kickback they thought they would. And I think a lot of people are really surprised. People are actually going, hey, man, we're here if you need us. Or it's really refreshing to hear someone talking like that. Do you know what I mean? It's kind of like, and I think the more that we are just open and honest, the stronger we're going to be, not just in our industry, as human beings across the whole fucking spectrum, to be fair, the more kind of open we can be, not to kind of be oversharing, but not to be overly protective. I think it's a big, big issue. It's a big problem.
With the idea of the state of the industry, what is your opinion of the state of the industry now from when you started back in the 90s?
Pandemic's just fun, if I'm honest. I think the fun's gone out of it a lot. It was really hard, but it was really fun at the same time. It's kind of like, we were given the freedom to be ourselves a lot of the time. That shifted and changed, which is where it started squeezing me. Because it's just like, oh man, I think a lot of people used to get in it because it was the second best job to being a rock star. That's why I got into it. My band didn't work. Do you know what I mean? I didn't make it. I never became Slash. Do you know what I mean? Even though we did think, when Appetite for Destruction came out, yeah, I reckon we could beat this. It's kind of like, yeah, we didn't beat that. So I was thinking, well, what else can I do with creativity that pays money? And it was kind of like, and advertising was it. So I think the fun's gone a lot out of it. But what I think's come into it is more humanity. I'd like to think more humanity. I think people are a lot more caring about what other people's pains are and struggles are and all that kind of stuff and what they're sacrificing. But I think it's got a long way to go. It's kind of, I think as every industry has, to be fair, it's opening up, it's starting to learn things, but there's still a lot hidden in the closet. There's still a lot of skeletons in there.
Where do you feel like the main pressure comes from? Do you think it comes from within the agencies? Do you think it comes from the clients? Or is it like an overall thing?
The pressure you can control is the pressure that comes from within. The stuff you can't control, if you imagine you've got two circles, you've got like the circle of concern and the circle of influence. I spent a lot of my early years in the circle of concern, trying to fix stuff I couldn't fix. And neglecting the circle of influence, which is the stuff I could change. So I think the pressures come from outside and inside. I think there's the pressure from clients, there's the pressure from budgets, the pressure from the amount of media that needs to be supplied, the formats that need to be supplied, the pressure from shareholders and stakeholders, all of that kind of stuff. Massive, massive pressures. That feels more than it's ever been because you've got holding companies own more of the stuff. But then you can't really control that. As a creative, you'll go under if you try and control too much of that, especially if you're not in the leadership level. It will suck out your soul and leave you on the curb. You got to look at what's your circle of influence and what can you influence. And what you can influence is your own mindset. What you can influence is your own ways of working. What you can influence is the ways of working with your biology, not fighting your biology. That's the stuff that you can start changing. And I think that's where people should be focusing on, is what's the pressure inside that I can start working on. Like if I knew half the stuff I knew now, if I knew a tiniest fraction of what I knew now, I wouldn't have been burnt out and I'd have done better work. And I know that for a fact.
Because I always find, well, with some of the jobs I've done, you can feel the pressure from the agency, from the client, because they're so, some of them are so scared to lose them, lose the clients. I feel the power of the client more than I ever have. From the agency side, obviously I'm a bit separated a little bit with being on the production side, but you definitely feel that fear of losing a client.
Well, that impacts quality then, exactly, and it also impacts the, you know, your creative freedom on a job, doesn't it? It's like, well, who knows better, you or me?
And you, I feel like back at, well, I don't know, I'm kind of speaking for being in the 90s, but it felt like the agency was the power, and it's like, this is the way we do it, and if you don't do it, then go somewhere else. But I feel like, I don't know if that attitude's there. It's like pretty badass, but I don't know if that punk attitude exists as much.
I don't know. No, I don't think it seem to be as possible. I think the thing with the client, a lot of the pressure comes from the clients because the clients are under a lot of pressure. The clients are terrified as well because of shareholders and stakeholders. I mean, everybody's cut in to do more. So the higher you go, the more you find it's being cut, cut, cut. So I think, yeah, I used to 100% blame the clients when I was a creative director, for example. But then I started working with the clients and client side and thinking, fucking hell, the pressure on them is intense as well. They've got to, like, the amount of stuff they have to produce and stuff. So I think it's all the way to the top, it's difficult. But we can only kind of work on our level of it and kind of go, well, how can I, as a person, better handle the pressure myself? What can I do to be like that athlete who kind of, because if you take the pressure off an athlete, if you take the stadium away, take the crowds away, take the state shareholders away, there's no game, there's no point. So you kind of need the pressure. So the pressure isn't the problem, but a maladaptive pressure response is the problem. Is how you handle the pressure. You can alchemize it for something great, or you can let it destroy you. It's like an analogy. If you think of like pressure like fire, if you treat fire well, it will feed your family. Yeah. But if you don't treat fire well, it'll burn the family house down. Same with pressure. It's kind of like you need to work out, how do we properly use it? How do we properly utilize it so we can alchemize it into something great? And I didn't do that. And I fought against that. So I think that's the thing, is that the pressures are definitely external. 100% is external pressure. But is that in our circle of influence or circle of concern? And then what can we influence?
Well, it feels like agencies need kind of loads of yous running around, you know, kind of, this feels like to me, what's happened now and listening to you speak, it feels like, well, we're all human, we're all wired up in completely different ways, and there's no mechanical way of doing this. So pressure to each one of us just like grief, you know, comes out and we you know, we cope with it in different ways, I guess. I think people within the industry need the tools to be able to deal with it. But right now there's not that, that's not given within agencies and production companies for that matter. So it almost feels like your job right now, Matt, is more relevant than ever, really.
Yeah, I'm spreading it as fast as wide as I can. I'm doing all of this kind of stuff to try and get that stuff out, that word out, because the reality is that the pressure is not going to get any less. As we move forwards, the pressures, if anything, are going to get higher. So we need to have better ways of managing it, of working with it. Now, luckily, science and psychology knows how to do that. We know how to do that. And there are industries where they do handle the pressure really, really well. And it's bringing that into the creative industries, the wider creative industries, to kind of go, hey, this is the magic you've not seen before. And actually it works. Like I always say, I work more now. I do more projects now, more varied now, at tighter deadlines now. And I'm nowhere near a burnout. I won't burn out because I can manage it better. I know how to manage it. And another little tip, a little really important thing, is that we tend to think that things like burnout is a really big thing, obviously, right now, because of the pressure. But people think that what causes burnout is too much work. So what people tend to do is, okay, we're gonna spread the work out, or we'll take less work on, or whatever. But that's pseudoscience. It's bad science. Too much work doesn't burn people out. Too little work that is meaningful burns people out. And that's what's happening, is that too much of the work now has got no meaning for the people doing it, creating it. And when I look back at my days, why did I have the burnout? A collection of things that just built up. But one of the things wasn't the amount of work I was doing. I was doing that amount of work a decade before that. But it had no meaning for me anymore. When you said, like, do I fall out of love with it? That was the problem. When I fall out of love with something, or when we fall out of love with something, that thing no longer has meaning for us. Therefore, by default, it becomes meaningless. Therefore, by default, why am I killing myself for this thing? And that's where I think the big shift is.
I guess a lot of times you're holding on to a community, aren't you? You're holding on to a kind of way of life, but I mean, there's a lot more that goes into it. There's family and pressures. And
especially when you get further and further up in your career. Gets heavier and heavier on you. What would you say is your like main piece of advice for people like suffering with the pressures and the anxieties of work within our industry at the moment? If you had like one key piece of advice.
It's not you. You're not broken, and you can get better. And I think too many of us add too much pressure on by going, it's me, I'm the faulty one. And I think it's not, you're not broken. And I think the big thing is, I think a lot of people think, well, it's like with an addiction. A lot of people, if they're in an addiction, they'll go, well, I'm not going to stop doing the addictive behavior now because it's too late. I've already done the damage. I might as well just keep going until I slide into the grave. It's not true. All we are is change. Our cells are consistently, continually changing. I mean, we can all get better. We can change it when you do the right things. So I think it's knowing that. It's knowing not just, one, you're not broken, and two, anything that's not working can be put right if you go and see the right personal people who can give you the right stuff.
And like, what would be your, if you could look at the industry in the next 5 years, or even 10, because it takes a long time, like what would be your ideal scenario for it, do you think?
I would love everybody to know how to work the way that my clients are working and are learning to work, and the people I train. Because I think the reality is that people can do more when they are working smarter. And not even working smarter. The thing is, what people are doing is, there's a lot of talk about stress management. And that's a reactive thing. So what I like to talk about, and what I get to do with my clients, is about, we're not going to talk about eliminating stress. I want to be talking about maximizing flow. Yeah, when people are in a flow state, when they spend more of their life in a flow state, that's a completely different neurochemical structure that goes through the nervous system. When we're in a flow state, we're feeling our best and we're performing our best. Yeah, we're 5 times more creative, 7 times more productive when we're in a flow state. When we're in a stressed out state, we're running on adrenaline and cortisol, which is a neurotoxin. Not good. It's not sustainable. When you're in a flow state, you're running on serotonin, endorphins, dopamine, oxytocin, norepinephrine. These are the kind of feel good. These are the shit we pay good money for on the street. Do you know what I mean? It's kind of like this is the chemical cocktail that we've got inside our nervous system when we can unlock flow inside ourselves. So what I would love the industry just to be like the old surf communities back in the 70s and the 80s, man. I'd love them to be flow cultures. But people are living in a state of flow, because then they're not, the pressure is the pressure is their wave then, and they want to catch it. And I think that would be pretty fucking awesome if people could access and unlock that.
I always used to think Craig was like, when I know Craig's in a flow state is when I can't get in touch with him, like in any means. I'm like, where have you been for half the day? He's like, oh, I've been writing. You're like, because you are in your flow state, right? Yeah. I feel like that's what you
turn off.
You turn off, and he switches everything off, and I can't get in touch with him. I'm like, well, okay, well, he's done. He's done for a day.
I'm riding my wave, mate.
Yeah, but you find that. I think you find that pretty important to like turn off, thing like distractions around you. You get pretty zoned into what you're doing, which I really, really like envy sometimes, because I find it quite hard. You know, to switch bits off, or emails or tech, you know, I want to get back in touch with people like straight away. Or if a script comes in, I want to make sure I'm there straight away. And if it's been an hour, I'll get anxious that I haven't, you know what I mean? Like sent the right thing, because that's the pressure I'm feeling, that it needs to be ASAP. Everything needs to be straight away. So I do get envious of you being able to switch off and zone in and hone in on your writing specifically.
But it's like the thing that you're talking about as well, Matt, is the meaning. You know, it's when you work on it, mate, we speak about this on every fucking podcast. It's just about making work that you're passionate about and that means something to you. When you do that, you know, whether it's good or bad, you're feeling a lot better about yourself. You know, it's kind of one of them. It's, I guess it's just making time for that, isn't it? But
it's making more time for it. It's micro-dosing flow. That's the trick. That's the secret. because what it does, it accumulates. So that those chemical cocktail, that chemical cocktail builds up in the nervous system. So the more you're in it, the more you get into it. And the great thing about flow states is that flow states, the thing that it destroys immediately is fear. Fear and flow can't exist in the same brain at the same time. So rather than trying to get rid of the fear, let's increase the flow, push it out in a really healthy way. And that's the thing. You have to obviously kind of toggle flow on and off and stuff. And there's ways of doing that, because you don't want to overdose on like endorphin. Otherwise you get rage and stuff. But yeah, flow is the way. Flow is the secret. It's the secret sauce.
Like for me, I'm trying to think of a scenario. I'm trying to think of, say I haven't won a job in a while, and a pitch comes in and I really, really want it. And the fear is that you're not going to get it. And you'd really, really like, so the fear is already breaking into you there. Cause you're like, in your head, you're like, I need this one.
Yes.
And sometimes I actually feed off that sometimes, like the pressure and the fear of it. Then you're like, then you put yourself in a situation where you're like, you know, but that pressure can be really bad. Cause then you're not kind of finding yourself in that flow state. I don't know. It's kind of,
yeah, I mean, I think our industry, I think it rubs off on everyone in our lives personally. You know, my girlfriend's a primary school teacher. Bloody hell, like, she feels the roller coaster ride of everything that's happening in our industry. And bless her, she's curious as well. You know, she's interested. Feel very fortunate to have her like that, actually. But for a lot of people at home, you know, we can be a nightmare, can't we? Because it really doesn't, you know, it doesn't stay at work. It's just part of you, I think, you know, the creative side of things and the pressure. And I mean, it's funny with our work as well. It's like there's a lot of identity kind of put on a person, which is, again, damaging, you know. But we choose our work to also be a big part of our identity, and it's I don't know, it's a tricky one to navigate, because there's a fine line between passion and really enjoying your work. Mm. And where does, well, you know, in it, you know, yeah, you love making commercials, you know, you can't switch off, you're taking it home. That's kind of part of your passion as well. And, and you know what I mean? Where do you draw the line? You know, it's quite difficult, isn't it? And obviously when you're on holiday, you get an email, do you want to pitch on this really exciting
brief?
Well,
yeah, yeah.
Fuck me, you'll be pitching on it.
And you'll especially being from a freelance point of view.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I'm looking at casting tapes while I'm trying to enjoy a holiday with my girlfriend on my phone, and she's there looking over me and like, what are you doing? I'm like,
girlfriend's there swimming with dolphins, you know?
Yeah. I'm there looking at some tapes, casting tapes on my phone, you know, and lying and saying I'm not. Because I, you know, in my head, I'm like, if I don't do this, things aren't going to get moved forward for when I get back. And you think that it's going to all collapse if you don't make a decision right there and then.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, because it was freelance, you're kind of a small business owner as well. So it's not, you're not just the creative, you're the account department, and you're knocking on your door going, we need to balance these books, man. Do you know what I mean? So it's, it is really hard. The thing with identity is that we need to be careful about what we identify with as well, because I would say I over-identified with my job. And I'd say, well, this is a really bad problem, is that it's another thing about with burnout. So you got one of them is that lack of meaningful work, over-identification with what you do, not who you are. So if you think, basically what it is this, is that everything you identify with has the power to control you. This is why I don't give labels to people. Because if you give a label to someone, say you are this illness, you are this diagnosis, and that's therefore that has the power to control them, and that's why people tend to not get out of those situations, get locked and stuck. It's not me, it's the OCD, it's not me, it's the thing, it's not me, it's the depression, it's not me, it's this. Everything you disidentify with, you regain the power over,
and then becoming a crutch.
Exactly. So it's also as creatives, we have a tendency to over identify with I am a creative, and therefore my whole self-worth depends on someone saying, I love that. Well, what happens on the other 9 out of 10 times when they say, I don't like it, or I don't get it, or it's just, I just don't, not feeling this one. Well, that to go straight to your heart and soul, because that's your identity that they're attacked right there. And they're not meaning to, they don't know that, but we as creators, we know that. So we need to have some kind of separation from that.
But I think that's, it's interesting, because it's real, like, because I completely agree with you and separating that, but God, it's hard.
Yeah, tough.
I find it hard, really tough.
You
gotta have a separate. You gotta have a separation, because otherwise you end up. I remember I got the big bollocking. One of the wake up calls, I guess, was my wife at one point says, basically shouted at me, "Stop fucking creatively directing me. You keep doing that." Do you know what I mean? You kind of, because you do. You switch identity, and you kind of, like, the problem is if you're locked into one facet of yourself in the wrong domain of your life, bad shit can happen. So we need to kind of go, who am I right now? Where am I right now? And in some ways, if it helps, create another identity that enables you to at least have a bridging loan to something safer. But don't over-identify with what you do, because although it feels like you're doing the best work of your life, you're not, because you're over-identifying with negative responses and probably handbraking yourself a lot of the time as well. You're not fully expressing yourself for fear of being judged, because it's an identity thing. If it's just a behavioral thing, judge away. Bounce off me like a fucking, do you know what I mean? It's going to bounce off me. Fry an egg on Teflon. If it's my identity, subconscious bullshit, I mean, it's not my identity at home. So whatever that person does is totally cool with me.
I love that. I think that's a great bit of advice.
It is a great bit of advice. I think it's a really nice place to come to a conclusion on this as well.
I think
well.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming on, Matt.
And, thank you, guys. Really enjoyed it.
Yeah. It's been wicked, hasn't it?
Been great.
Yeah, lovely. Nice one.
We'll speak soon.
See you later. Bye. Bye.